Welcome to Chamber Breakers, presented by Verizon Business and Yahoo Finance. I'm Leanna Brinded, Head of Yahoo Finance UK.
And I'm Xavier White, CSR and Innovation Marketing Manager of Verizon Business. During this series, Leanna and I will be inviting thought leaders to break the echo chambers surrounding key social issues.
This season, we're focused on CSR at a time of global crisis and the impact it is having on mental health.
We're delighted to welcome Christina McKelvey, Scottish Minister for Older People and Equalities, who will begin today's episode with a brief talk on the challenges older populations are facing.
One of the things that I'm acutely aware of as the Minister for Older People is the potential of the increase of social isolation and loneliness as a result of COVID-19 and the impact that can have on an individual's mental health and well-being. So for us, social isolation and loneliness is a big issue in Scotland. I lead on this piece of work. So as the Minister for Older People and Equalities, with the responsibility of our social isolation and loneliness strategy, I've ensured that we have been building basically a cutting edge social isolation and loneliness strategy in Scotland. It's called A Connected Scotland. There's lots of different opportunities and events, but actually some of it needs to be connected up with people who needed it. One of the brilliant pieces of work that I love doing is with one of our national organisations who are called the Befriended Networks, and there's another organisation called Generations Working Together. They basically do what they say on the tin, and we also have the Age Scotland Helpline, which provides support, advice and friendship. And we've also provided a lot of support for our local organisations. So through the Wellbeing Fund, we've already been able to support 344 local projects. I had to look that and check it, but representing over £8 million worth of funding going directly to work in communities across Scotland. And it's that important bit about the Connected Scotland part is how do you connect people with their communities? So it's that very close grassroots connections being made there. I also recognise that social isolation and loneliness affects people of every age and every stage, and our strategy takes that into account. And the pandemic has highlighted some of that in a way that maybe most people would never have imagined a few months ago. And although we had a strategy now going on for 2 years to tackle this, and we had pretty strong building blocks and a national implementation group who are those stakeholders, we realised that there would be a group of people, because of the pandemic, whether you're shielded, you're at risk, you're more vulnerable, you know, you're separated from your family because of physical distance and all of that, that we'd have a new tranche of people coming through who would be affected by social isolation and loneliness. We know in Scotland that social isolation and loneliness has an impact on your general health and wellbeing of smoking 15 cigarettes a day. That's why it's incredibly important. So turning to mental health and the real importance and the importance that we place on that in government is that we know that people were experiencing stress, anxiety, during really exceptional and uncertain times. And I was listening to a phone in the radio this morning where we have given additional advice in Scotland and extended shielding for a bit longer, for another 6 weeks. And some people phone in and they say, oh my God, I can't cope with another 6 weeks. And other people saying, thank goodness, because I was too scared anyway. So people are already sitting in that really anxious place. What type of impact does that have on their mental health and well-being? So we launched the 21st of April, you might have heard this, a marketing campaign called Clear Your Head, and it's to help our population, including older people, look after their mental health and well-being. But during and after the COVID outbreak, I think one of the key things that we realised very quickly is that COVID's exposed a lot of the challenges that we were already focusing on anyway, but exposed it maybe for more people and in a more acute way for some people. So that Clear Your Head campaign is something that's it came at the right time, but also it's something we could probably continue into the future as well. Because one of the things that I think we'll realise is that the impact of COVID for many people won't be felt until after COVID is over, really. It's the residual bereavement. As restrictions start to change and we start to lift them, there will be people feeling worried about getting out more. And that's why the Clear Your Head campaign and the website contains a number of resources for support. And it's full of brilliant information. So if anything comes out of this podcast today, please go to the Clear Your Head website and use some of the resources there. We have a national assistance helpline for people who are asked to isolate. And the number is 0800 111 4000. Now, we're not saying we've connected with everyone who needs it, but I don't know a street now that a neighbour has not knocked a door and said, do you need some messages? Do you need a prescription? How about, you know, we have a cup of tea over the hedge? And I see it in my local area and I see it everywhere else. And it's about building that sense of community. If COVID's taught us anything, it's taught us that we understand what's really important, and it's humanity, isn't it?
Thank you very much, Christine. There's so much that we want to follow up on, really drilling down from the beginning parts of your talk. On the podcast, we like to delve into language and how important that is to understand a community. And so the fact that you're a minister for older people, can you describe why that is different to calling a community maybe elderly?
So I've got a fantastic reference group that I work with called the Older People's Strategic Action Forum. I'm actually meeting with them this Thursday. I try to meet with them every fortnight. And they're a group of older people, many of them retired, some of them activists, some of them in organisations. But, you know, the action part of it is the bit that's most important to them. They are not, you know, frail older people sitting in their homes with their fire turned up and their door locked. They are particularly active individuals. And one of the things that they wanted us in our older people strategy to bring forward was to change some of the language, because the language that we use can underpin some of the discrimination and the ageism that we see. So when you describe someone as elderly, the picture you get in your head is a frail old person with a walking stick or a Zimmer. Whereas if I talk about my action forum, that gives you a much, much different view of people. It's also about what do they bring? You know, all that wisdom, lived experience, all the mistakes they made that we're all going to make, and they'll tell us anyway and we'll not listen. But, you know, I get, you know, it, just how important that is. So if we can change the narrative of how we treat older people, how we, you know, value older people, and how we use older people to inform the work that we do. And that's why the piece of work that I do with Generations Working Together is magical, because it is really a fantastic, loads of projects all over Scotland where older people are supporting younger people are supporting older people, breaks down all of those barriers, breaks down some of the fear factor and the perceptions of fear between older people and younger people, and makes for absolutely magical relationships that I've just seen blossom. It's wonderful. So you get that language right, you then approach it from a very, very different point of view.
It's interesting that you mentioned Generations Working Together. At Verizon, we're actually really pleased to have worked with them as an organisation. We met them through Business in the Community, and our volunteers have been giving them consultation on how to transition their services to digital, and we're delighted to have worked with them. What I was wondering about that is, obviously, you mentioned intergenerational learning, Generations Working Together do some really great things. Do you think there's a benefit to businesses getting involved in that? Because often it's the young and the old, but the businesses sort of sit in the middle. Do you think there's a place for businesses to play in intergenerational learning?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I've got business in the community consulting on both my OPSAF group, my Older People Strategic Action Forum, and the National Implementation Group for Social Isolation and Loneliness Strategy. So we had a smashing event with Cynthia Marks from BITC at Christmas time. And we launched our Social Isolation and Loneliness Strategy at Christmas the year before, because that felt like an important time to do that, because it's a time of family, people to come in together. But for lots of people, Christmas is a miserable time because they don't get to see people that they love. So we had the Business and Community event just before Christmas 2019. It seems so long ago now. And we worked very closely with business in the community. And one of the pieces of work that they spoke about at that event was how social isolation and loneliness, especially for the older workforce, has an impact on, you know, how they work, how the workplace works, how they can work together. And Generations Working Together were really keen for working with business in the community. And I'm glad that they've worked with you. But, you know, getting that digital connection right as well. Absolutely, there is a place for business, because many people work into their, you know, their older age now as well. Many businesses will rely on older workers because of their lived experience and, you know, their qualifications and all of the wisdom that they can bring into a workplace, and how they can use that then to bring up the younger workforce and support the younger workforce as well. So I just see it as a win-win for everybody if you've got much better sort of a social responsibility policies and value and support your workforce across all of its challenges and transitions, especially older workforce as well. And, you know, it can only benefit a business. There's no doubt about that.
You've talked a little about people that are in the older demographic that have retired and people that are still in the workplace. But I was wondering about that divide, that transition from being an old person in the workplace and the challenges that you face there to them being retired. Are there specific mental health implications of retiring?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And what we realised from the work that we did in the older people's Forum and the work they were doing on social isolation and loneliness is those key transitions in life could be the trigger points for changes that could either be positive or negative. And for a lot of older people, if you're retiring from your workplace, for some who have been there for many years, their whole social circle, the whole life maybe for some people is their workplace, and that could be a real, you know, trigger point for poor mental health and all of the disconnection and loss that you feel from that. For many other older people, it's a release. It's, you know, a time of change, maybe a time to travel, a time to, you know, get creative and do the things that you've always been putting off, you know, like painting the shed and all of the things, or getting involved as a volunteer, because many, many older people, especially in Scotland, are the backbone of our volunteering workforce in that sense. And then you see people who have maybe have been working really hard all their life and they retire and they transform into something completely different. I certainly see that when I have colleagues who have retired for this place, who you see a few months later and they look wonderful and you think, maybe it's time to go to politics. Maybe that's why I'm starting to feel a bit old and battered. But, you know, you see that. So it's difficult getting that balance right. And I suppose, you know, some of the work that we do in preparing people for retirement is very, very important here, you know, giving them the connections to volunteering opportunities or other creative opportunities. One of the things that we try to get some of our older people to get involved in is all of our public boards, because you could have lots of really valued, experienced and wise people on some of our public boards, as well as having some young people, and make it much more diverse as well, so that we understand the needs. So there's a lot that you can do in the preparation for retirement that would maybe stave off some of that, but there is definitely people who feel that disconnection, that loss, and you know, the end to a part of their life that whether it made them feel useful and whether they feel not useful now. So getting those right connections during that preparation for retirement, I think, is incredibly important. So one of the areas where the business and community people could really do a bit more work, I think we all need to do a bit more work on that, is how do we prepare people for retirement so they don't end up in those poor mental health situations.
So Christina, as you talked about before, the onset of coronavirus and the fact that it's enforced isolation, and it looks like it could be into 2021 until things become a bit of a more of a new normal. And of course, with older people, they are in more the medically vulnerable bracket. So right now, what are you seeing as the immediate concerns from the community that you speak to all the time? And what can people do right now in order to help that community when there's so much pressure on people in general mental health because of this lockdown?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really important question, because it leads to the point of where people feel as if they've lost time. So the people that I speak to that I know who are older people are thinking, you know, 5 months in a shielding situation, because we're taking it up to the end of July, you know, it might be a bit longer, maybe longer if we don't have a vaccine. You know, that valuable, precious time, you know, not being able to see family, not being able to take part in family events, whether, you know, it's to grieve properly if you've lost someone, weddings, you know, christenings, babies being born. you know, people, I think it's that classic saying of, you don't know what you miss until you've not got it anymore. You don't know what you've lost until you've not got it anymore. And I suppose that time element is the thing that's most important for those older people. So some of them are anxious for lockdown and for shielding to end. Some of them understand the challenges and the risks in that, you know, but people just want to be able to live their life and live the best life they possibly can. So I think for the people I'm speaking to, the biggest issue is that lost time and lamenting the loss of that time as well. That can be tough. And even just that thought process could lead to poor mental health as well. Yeah.
Taking that thought of poor mental health, you mentioned earlier that loneliness is as bad as 15 cigarettes. That's quite shocking. It's an interesting thing to hear. And you mentioned also old people being lonely at Christmas. Now, I was thinking, actually, a lot of people are lonely at Christmas. Fewer people are getting married, more immigration, seeing more people moving away from families, etc. is there a scope for loneliness initiatives to actually cross over, to work with older people, to perhaps match them up with others who are alone? Is there something that we could do to help the consequences of loneliness in general, not just in this demographic? And then also, are there learnings that you've had from the old people that you could transfer to the rest of society?
Yeah, our social isolation and loneliness strategy covers every age and every stage in life. And actually, we added some data questions to our Scottish social attitude survey in Scotland on basically asking people, how lonely do you feel? Because we knew lots of anecdotal evidence and we knew about the impact of loneliness on people, but we didn't actually know how many people in Scotland felt lonely. So we started to add some of those questions and we're building up that data now. And it's really interesting because apart from older people of being a category of people who are socially isolated and lonely the most, the other category, and they edged a wee bit forward in older people, was young mums, was women who had just had babies. And can you imagine if you've just had a baby in lockdown and the impact that will have on you as well? It's then the educational opportunities, the employment opportunities, and how those can become very, very limited to being mum, which is a wonderful time for many people. But it was for some people and some young women the most vulnerable time for them to be socially isolated and lonely. So our strategy covers every age and every stage. And our older people's work, we have specific sections in there on social isolation and loneliness that links back to our main strategy. And our main strategy, as I said, is informed very, very closely by stakeholders. I'm a great believer in lovely strategies as long as they've got action points in them and we can measure those actions, and then we can identify where we're not doing as much as we should and we can take action to address that. So it's great to have a strategy, but I wanted to make sure it was driven by the people that mattered, and that's why we have our implementation groups. So the strategy is the vehicle and all of our groups are the drivers. So the people that sit on that are incredibly important. Their experience and what they can bring is incredibly important. So Generations Work Together is a key partner, you'll not be surprised. Age Scotland is a key partner. There are veterans organisations, because that's another group of society. Our race organisations, we've got an amazing ethnic minority older people's network in Scotland who we've funded to feed people directly. So people who are shielding, people who are vulnerable, people who are at risk, they've been getting fed now every day by our older people's ethnic minority network, culturally appropriate food, because we're sending out a shielding box with essentials in it for people. But my first question when I seen the shielding box, what, 10, 11, 12 weeks ago, was, can we make sure this is culturally appropriate? Well, how can we do that? And all these organisations then said, well, we're a network, we could provide that. So we went, there's the money, go and do it. And it's wonderful to see that type of connection, because not only is that feeding people, keeping people nourished, it's keeping people connected as well. And that's really important. So those groups sit on our national implementation group. The creative arts sit on our national implementation group, and we've got an amazing festival in Scotland, if you ever get a chance to see it when it comes back. It's called Illuminate, and it's a festival for creatives, by creatives, for older people. It's fantastic. Singing and dancing and all sorts of amazing shows and pantos and, you know, book readings and poetry writing and it's fabulous. It's absolutely fabulous. And it's got a real lovely dynamic to it as well. So we've got all of those people on board. We've also got our transport people on board as well, pardon the pun, on board. Because for a lot of people, physical connections and using transport is incredibly important as well. So we've got the national concession card here in Scotland. And we've got lots of ways that we fund community transport links as well. And they all sit on this as well, because it can't just be about, this is a great idea. It has to be about, what do we actually need to do to create the connections that people need? And whether that's a transport connection, whether it's a connection with a community group, whether it's a connection with a statutory or funded body, then all of that is being done anyway. But actually it came into its own because of COVID, because we already had all those networks up and running and they were able to just repurpose, just refocus and focus right in on the people who needed it most. And we've got a brilliant story to tell. I'm not saying that we've not managed to, you know, cover everybody and make everybody happy. We'll never be able to do that. And, you know, tell me a government who has, but it could not have happened without the amazing relationship that we currently have with our stakeholders in Scotland. And that's why they're the most important people for me.
Great. I mean, there are definitely something, just something quickly that I want to follow up. There's all those amazing initiatives there. But how important is it for you as the minister to delineate between being alone and being lonely, yeah. and how important it is to have that understanding in order to enact on these initiatives?
Yeah, and that's a very clear question that we set out, because some people might not want you to chat their door or to offer them a connection or to say you should be doing this. They might just say, I'm absolutely fine, hen. You know, I'm fine. But it's just been able to you know, ensure that people know what's there as well. So for some people, you know, it's about what they want to do. And I think if you've got a diversity of choice and people know that it's there, then they will dip in and out when it suits them. And that goes back to that point that I made in my opening remarks about being kind to yourself and doing things that you love to do. For some people, the things they love to do is to go and walk up a mountain in Scotland and not see another soul for 12 hours. And for some people, it's just knowing what's there and whether they can dip in and use it when they want to or not in that occasion. I'll tell you a wee story. There's a brilliant social enterprise in Edinburgh called Bridge Farm. And it's mainly all adults with learning disabilities that run it. And it's got a great exhibition space. There's lots of artwork and stuff goes in there. We've had some of our national implementation group meetings in there because the cafe bakes the best scones. Believe me, the best. But I was out there when we launched the strategy, and they were telling me a story about the lane that runs up the side here. There's a cemetery at the end of the lane. And they watched this man going up every day, coming back down, stopping, having a wee look over to see what they were doing. And one of the, there's an arts worker there, stopped and says, oh, we just watched you going up in that lane. And he's like, my wife died 6 months ago, and I've just come up and see her every day, and I've got nothing else in my life, and she was my life. And they started chatting, and it turned out the man was a fine artist. And he says, well, we're looking for somebody to get involved here. So they made him feel useful. They says, we could really do with your skills here. But actually what they did was dealt with his loneliness as well. So he was someone who didn't actually really realise he was that lonely until he was then connected by some people. So he comes in 2 days a week, teaches art, you know, gets so much out of that, but gives so much back. And in the meantime, he supported people with their social isolation loneliness, and we managed to support him with his as well. And it's just that's those type of stories is what matters to me, because they are real people. You know, I can talk about strategy and stats and money to the, and it's no my way anyway, but I could if that's what people wanted. But I like to tell real stories, because I think the real stories of the real impacts on real people is what maybe triggers something in somebody else to think, well, I could do that, or I might look at that, or, you know, that's how I feel. And having that empathy and that understanding, I think is really important.
Those are some really, really great stories from real people. And I kind of wanted to think, well, as businesses, and you know, some of our listeners would be business, we work in business, what can business do to have a story that has that kind of impact, where often it's seen as the corporate face, not the human face? Do you have any advice to business listeners as to what they or their company could do to try and help?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, for a lot of businesses, and I know the situation's changed now, but before COVID, where we had really low employment unemployment rates, so there was lots of competition there for people to come into workplaces. When your workplace is attractive to people for those right ethical reasons, where they realise, oh, well, I can get a couple of days a year to do some volunteering, or, oh, actually, that's your preferred charity, that's something I'm interested in. You know, businesses can do so much more around about the full holistic package that they sell to an employee, or to their current employees about, well, how can we make you feel, you know, part of your community? What can my business do to support, you know, the work that you do? And we've seen a lot of that in the COVID response as well. It's lots of small businesses, you know, lots of businesses who would not have thought about doing online deliveries or, you know, at-home deliveries when supermarkets couldn't meet the demand for that. In my constituency in particular, lots of small craft shops, the butchers and the bakers and all that, we all say, well, we can do this pack and deliver it to you, you know, on Tuesday. And just that type of, people will go back to those shops and buy from them. They will access a service or a business who have had that sort of approach to, you know, a time of national crisis. And if employees then feel I'm really valued in this workplace, but I've also got something valuable to give that's separate from this workplace, but they support me to do that, then I think that's maybe a way that workplaces could work and business could work, you know, with that very clear understanding about who are essential workers in this world. Well, we know who they are now, don't we? They're the supermarket checkout women. They're the guy that the porter and the cleaners in the hospitals. They're the nurses and the doctors, you know. And it's about understanding how important that is to people. If your business is not in that area, then how do you make connections with those areas so that you show that importance as well? And I think you then attract the best workforce and people that want to stay with you as well. Better workforce, happier workforce, better productivity, better outcomes, you know, better business, better economy.
Thank you so much, Christina. I mean, if I would love to chat for hours about this, and I'm sure a lot of people would want to learn more, listen more. And where can people find you? How can they get in touch and learn more?
So I'm dead easy because I love my technology. So I am on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, I am on my ministerial email account. It's Minister OPE. I quite like to think that means Minister for Hope. Although I did get introduced to a Carnegie conference where we were talking about, because we've got a kindness outcome at the heart of our national performance framework, Scott. I get introduced as Minister for Kindness. I thought, I'll have that. I'll do that.
Oh, that's lovely.
Great. That's a brilliant job. It's a brilliant job description. You know, so you can get me at ministerope@gov.scot, or you can get me at Scottish Parliament, Christina. You'll find me. There's a Christine, that's no me. She's 20 years older than me. Catch me. I'm a Christina SNP on Twitter and Christina Hamilton Larkhall in Stonehouse on Facebook.
Yeah, to echo what Leanna said, thank you so much for coming on Chamber Breakers.
It's been a fascinating conversation.
Find videos and articles about this series on the Yahoo Finance UK site. And if you've enjoyed this episode, which I'm sure you have, please rate, review and subscribe to hear more.
Coming up next week, we're excited to welcome Kieran Medcalf, who has worked as Head of Trans Inclusion at Stonewall, as a trans youth worker at the youth group Gendered Intelligence, and an LGBT advocate.